Yo, good morning. Welcome to the StoCast.com MLB strategy show. 9-game action. Dave Lofgren, Greg Ehrenberg, breaking it all down for you guys today. And slightly different format. Now, here's the thing. We're going to tweak some formats around for baseball, especially with basketball coming to an end. We want to make sure that we're giving you guys the best information and make it kind of as concise as possible. Baseball can be, you know, laborious at times when you're talking these 13, 12, 11 game slates and, you know, a lot of games, a lot of spots you just won't talk about at all. So we're going to try a bit of a different format, take more of a tiered approach by pitching and by stacks and all of that, see how it goes, see how you guys or what you guys think about it. And we'll see, Greg, we'll see. We'll see what works the best as we move forward. We got a lot of baseball left, so I want to try and optimize the process as we go forward.
Yeah, there's so many baseball slates where we'll talk when we go game by game. There'll be just so many pitchers who, if like, say I'm building out 150 lineups, it'll be like, I have 7% of this pitcher is going to be 8% owned. I might have 4% of a stack that's going to be 4% owned. And I do think that if we go game by game on every spot, so much of it just becomes like, hey, this is kind of an acceptable thing to play in MLB DFS. So hopefully that we could just create a format here where it's like, these are the pitchers we like, these are the hitters we like, and then we'll find some bets as well. So hopefully it'll help get you guys the best information while you guys not having to sit through like an hour and a half show or something like that.
And also still try and find good contrarian spots and pitching, hitting, good leverage spots and all of that. I actually think this will be more streamlined. I hope you guys will like this. We'll see. We'll see where it goes, but I think it'll be good. By the way, is it odd that I'm actually a little bit excited for the Sixers to be playing in a play-in tournament? Not because I wouldn't rather them be the sixth seed facing the Bucks, who, I mean, look, Giannis in doubt for game one. I'm not confident that Giannis is going to be there for game two or game three either. So sure, I would love the Sixers squaring off against the Milwaukee Bucks. No doubt about that. But there's something kind of cool about the play-ins, and then whoever wins in that faces the Knicks. So yeah, maybe I'm crazy, but you know, we get Sixers basketball and Joel Embiid is back.
I think the play-in is great for basketball. I very much enjoy it. There's this narrative like, oh, it's a waste of time because the teams just play to lose. The Heat were in the play-in game last year and ended up going to the NBA Finals. So the idea that like these teams are dead automatically because they're in the play-in game, I don't agree with that at all. And it's extra competitive basketball games that are good.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wonder if the Bucks end up losing, who Doc Rivers runs to blame it on first.
Well, if Giannis doesn't play, then it has to be the trainer's fault.
Yeah. Or Giannis just isn't strong enough, but he'll never take any responsibility for anything.
Yeah, it certainly won't be him. And I mean, if he's a real doctor, as he claims to be, he should be healing Giannis up right now.
Hey, damn right. Anyway, happy to have you guys with us. No basketball today. It returns tomorrow, but abbreviated slates from here on out in the NBA. I will still be going heavy in the betting streets for NBA because last year, Odd Shopper killed NBA bets in the postseason. Absolutely crushed. I know you remember that vividly. So we still got a lot of basketball to go, but plenty of baseball, big slates. Should be fun. If you haven't done so yet, take one single second here. Atone for your sins. On a Monday morning, coming back from the weekend, hit that thumbs up, subscribe to the channel, and leave a comment down below. You're watching, listening after the fact, whatever it may be. We see your comments. We read and respond to them. We appreciate you for it. It goes a long way. And as always, do you want to listen in podcast form? Apple Podcasts, Spotify, check it out. You don't want to listen to YouTube after the fact? All good. And leave a rating and a review, too. Those are always fun, and they help us. All right. Let's do it. Jake said he'll blame Blake Griffin, as always. Yeah, he'll find a way to do something. By the way, did you ever see the Norm Macdonald where he snuck in? Like they got him in as a reporter and he was asking Blake Griffin the questions.
Yeah. Yeah. And he says, you know,
remember what he asked him?
You know, Blake, there's a curse in the NBA. It's, you know, there's never been a player who's won rookie of the year twice in a row. You think you could break that curse this year?
So good, dude. And Blake played along nice. He got Kevin Durant once too, which was really good. I highly recommend you guys go and find Norm Macdonald questioning NBA players. Good stuff. Anyway, let's get into it, man. So pitching is I don't want to say it's stacked up top because it's not, but you have a lot of good options, or at least a handful. Tyler Glass now coming off an absurd start last time out against the Twins team that's striking out at an alarming clip. 14 Ks, 7 scoreless, 3 hits, 46 DraftKings points. He's a great in a great spot today against Washington. They have a 3-run total in LA. And I ran the Sims. I'm going to give you guys some exposures. I know you did the same. But right now, highest exposed player, highest exposed pitcher is Tyler Glass. Now, let's kick it off with him. And then there's another guy that I want to get into the weeds with you about, but I'll save that for a moment.
So starting with Glass now, he's the player I get the most exposure to. The thing about, and also if you guys are playing cash games, say Tyler Glass now, cash game pitcher you're going with on FanDuel and DraftKings, he's going to be one of your two pitchers. But when it comes to Glass now, we also have to compare him to what his ownership is, because he's projected for 38% ownership. So I do come in a little bit overweight to the field on Glass now through the Sims, but like not crazy overweight to him, because it's hard to just run lineups for baseball. And when a pitcher's at his price point, it's not all that common. You're just going to wind up like 80 or 90% of a pitcher. So I have Glass now at about half my lineups right now, but that's more or less what the field is doing as well. He's got a good matchup against the Washington Nationals. If we do see later on the day that a lot of teams have lineups where maybe there's cheaper hitters towards the top of the order that gives us some extra value options, then I could see a scenario where the Sims give us even more of Tyler Glass now. But the way the things stand right now, he's a chalk option. He's warranted to be chalk, but I'm not crazy different from the field. He shows up in somewhere around half my lineups. That's kind of what the field has as well. He's off to a great start this year. 2.25 ERA, 1.97 expected ERA. He's healthy, which has not been the case basically ever throughout his career. His career high in innings pitched actually was last year at 120 innings. So at some point, he's probably going to get hurt, as have all of the pitchers this year. But in the early going, really positive returns for Tyler Glass. Now, he's pretty easily the top overall pitcher on the slate if we're just looking at it from a projection standpoint.
No, he definitely is. There's another guy, though, getting ownership, slightly negatively leveraged, but so is Glass now when you're getting this much ownership, looking at our top pitchers tool. I really like George Kirby tonight, and I'm considering some ROI boosts in the Sims. I don't know how I'm going to play this quite yet, but he's sub 9K right now on DraftKings. And on FanDuel, he's 8,600. Mind you, Glass now is 11K on FanDuel. Merrill Kelly's 10K. Kelly's 94 on DraftKings. Glass now is 11K. Glass now's a better pitcher. He's in a great matchup. But just consider this for a second, right? So we know that Kirby started off the season, great start against Boston. Then he got banged up in two straight starts, right? But he has a 2.96 FIP and a 46% strand rate. Like, that's not – I know that he's been predictable in the strike zone. I get that. And that could be an issue, right, because he pounds the strike zone. But his velocity – literally everything looks fine with Kirby right now. Last year, T-Mobile Park played as the most pitcher-friendly venue in baseball. Cincinnati just played a series with the White Sox, ended that yesterday. They're in Seattle today. They have one of the highest strikeout rates in the league. I look at a guy in Kirby, you know he's efficient. You know he's still good. I kind of look at this as a buy low on George Kirby today, and I know I'm only getting 20% right now in the Sims. He's owned for sure. He's getting around 26% ownership, but this feels like a really high upside spot in a really friendly pitcher's park.
So the biggest issue I have with George Kirby is just that he hasn't generated very many strikeouts the last couple of years. And it's very odd. If you watch him pitch, he's got crazy velocities, gets a ton of movement on his pitches. So if you just watched him pitch for a couple innings, you'd be like, this guy must generate a crazy amount of swing and misses and strikeouts. But it just isn't really the case for him. He's a 19.4% strikeout rate this year, which, okay, it's small sample size. He's only made 3 starts. But then you go back and look at last year where he pitched an entire season. He did 22.7% K rate. And his velocity has also been down a little bit to open the year, 95.3 miles per hour compared to 96.2 last year. He's going to be fine moving forward. He does have an 8.16 ERA. All the underlying metrics are good on Kirby, though. 3.67 expected ERA, 2.97 FIP. The biggest issue has generally been his BABIP. He's a 380 BABIP. That's going to come down and get lower. But I just don't know that that means that all of a sudden strikeouts are going to follow. And if his strikeout upside is kind of capped, it's hard for me to want to get to him as a real chalky option today. not that he's like out of my player pool, but just less exposure to him than the field, considering that he is the second most popular player on the slate overall. And then also I do question what the strikeout upside is for him.
I mean, his strikeout prop is 6.5 juice to the over. That's a good number.
It is. It's a good number. He often pitches deep into games, but still the numbers on him indicate that he's not a pitcher that has a lot of strikeout upside. He hasn't generated strikeouts in the past, and pretty much every projection model has a strikeout rate lower this year than last year as well. Even as low as the bat has him at 21%, Zips has him at 21%. So none of these projection models are particularly bullish on his strikeout rate going forward. It's hard for me to really want to play him in like a big chunk of my lineups.
I get it. We see this a little differently. Last year, 26.5% K rate at home, 21% strikeout rate on the road. I think there's some silver linings here that make him look better in a good park against the K-heavy Reds team. We'll see. I mean, I'm only getting 20% right now, but I do think this is a good bounce back spot. And his owner, his price point to me is low. The ownership is the only thing that gives me a little bit of pause. It's not like he's flying under the radar today. He's getting second highest ownership on the slate, higher than Merrill Kelly, who's facing Chicago. Merrill Kelly, by the way, another guy really good at home, like good everywhere, but home road splits have been very significant over the past couple of years. What do you do with a guy like Kelly? Because these are the three guys we're talking about in this top tier of pricing. We can get to Montas as well against Seattle. That's actually a pretty good spot.
Yeah, if I'm going to be contrarian at the top, Montas actually is my preferred option. For a lot of the year, I've been making fun of all the ownership against the Mariners because it has seemed like a lot of slates, no matter who the pitcher is, no matter what their price tag is, pitchers just like default in 30% owned against the Mariners. This is one of the only times this year that hasn't been the case. Frankie Montas only 11% owned against the Mariners. They have one of the highest strikeout rates of any team in baseball. And Frankie Montas, who had dealt with injuries all of last year, the year before that, he got traded from the A's to the Yankees, and it just seemed like an issue for him, whether it was because he wasn't totally healthy or because of the extra added spotlight to him pitching in New York. It just wasn't really something that went well for him. But in previous years, we've seen Frankie Montas as being a top-end starting pitcher, and so far this year, he's looked really good. 2.16 ERA, 2.78 expected ERA. The strikeout rate has not quite been there for him, but I'm actually not super concerned about it just because there is a long track record of him being a high strikeout pitcher, 24.1% for his career overall. So I do think there's a pretty good chance the strikeouts end up bouncing back for him. And then also something else to consider with Montas, the velocity's there. And it was down last year when he was dealing with injuries, but 95 miles per hour, pretty solid for Frankie Montas so far. So in a high strikeout matchup, and then also, like you said, really pitcher-friendly park, I like Frankie Montas for what is like a third of the ownership on George Kirby.
I like him too, for sure. But I still like Kirby. I mean, Glasnow, Kirby, Montas, I don't see how, and maybe you see this differently than I do, but I just don't see how you get to a guy like Seth Lugo today. He's getting 13% on DraftKings. On FanDuel, that price point's wildly prohibitive. But The problem is that, yes, it's a phenomenal matchup against the White Sox. No one's going to argue that Seth Lugo has, you know, arguably the best matchup on the slate. They're terrible. They lose Luis Robert. The whole lineup's bad. But it is a guy that, so far, 11% strikeout rate. He's inducing swinging strikes at 7%. Is the matchup good enough to say, you know what, I'm going to pay a mid 8K price point for Seth Lugo today? Unless you think he gets back to the, you know, 23-25% K rate, which is entirely possible. He's only made a few starts, but yeah, I was a little surprised to see him priced there. I thought he'd be like high 7Ks.
So the reason he's picking up ownership today, it's not a crazy amount, it's 13%. But the reason people are getting there at all is because he's pitching against the White Sox, and the White Sox are terrible. That's literally the only reason. And I mean, he's gotten off to a good start this year from an ERA perspective, but there's been no strikeout upside to this point, only an 11.8% K rate. I do think that bounces back just because he's always been a pretty good strikeout pitcher, whether he's a starter or when he's been a reliever. I mean, last year with the Padres, he had a 23.2% strikeout rate. So I do think it's going to bounce back for Seth Lugo, but still, even though the White Sox offense hasn't been great this year, it is a hitter-friendly ballpark. Lugo's pitching on the road there. So there are other spots I prefer to get to.
Yeah, me too. I actually think you have a lot of good pitching options and contrarian spots today. Like you had mentioned Montas at 11%. Mm-hmm. That feels like, and I know that the strikeout stuff hasn't been prolific to start the year, but that's an interesting place. 9K on FanDuel. DraftKings, you're not paying an exorbitant amount for him either. He's what, 9K on both. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's 8 guys getting double digit ownership. Some of these guys, I mean, there's one guy pitching today starting, Nick Nastrini, I think it is, who isn't even in the player pool. So, you know what I mean? There's going to be some guys that were probably, well, you're definitely not getting to him, but like Darius Vines against Houston, Mitchell Parker is facing the Dodgers. There's some ugly spot. Spencer Arrighetti.
Yeah, he looked terrible in his first start. It's funny because I think this is just a result of all the pitcher injuries where teams have to call people up and then you just get these pitchers that aren't in the pool. I can't remember who it was that was starting the other day who wasn't in the player pool. And just the only question in chat, people asked me, would you roster him if he was in the player pool? Like, this is the most pointless question I've ever been asked in my entire life. But it got asked like 5 times. People kept bringing it up. But yeah, it is something that we're seeing more of this year than in the past, which is likely due to all the injuries.
Yeah. So my point is there are some good options and then there's some guys that just really should not be touched. What about though, sticking in this like mid-range, because Tyler Glasnow is in a tier of his own, right? I think we can agree. He's in a pricing tier of his own. And then you get into this 8 and 9K range. Montas, Merrill Kelly, Kirby's another one. Sonny Gray's picking up a considerable amount of ownership. He made his first start against the Phillies and looked really, really good. I mean, he was going to be limited, and he was, to only 64 pitches, but he went 5 clean innings with 5 strikeouts. We know that Sonny Gray is a good pitcher. He's going up against an A's team that has a 3.3 run implied total today. I guess the question now is, do we assume he's stretched out enough? What are we thinking, 85 pitches or something like that for Sonny Gray? Because he's popular.
I'm going to say there's not enough information to know right now, because if we find out later on the day that he's only going to throw 70 or 75 pitches, then I wouldn't have a whole lot of interest in him. And I would assume that that would potentially lower his ownership a little bit as well. If he's going to be unrestricted, then yeah, he looks great at $8,500 in a spot against the Oakland A's. It's just at a point in the day where we don't have the pitch count information. My interest in him is very much tied to how many pitches he's allowed to throw.
Yeah. And for what it's worth, if you guys haven't looked at the odds in some of these games yet, you have Chicago White Sox 3.7 total, Oakland 3.3, Cincy 3.3, Seattle 3.9, Washington 3. So that's what, like 5-6 teams right there with sub 3 run totals. Then you've got the Dodgers at 5.7, Arizona at 5, Houston at 5, Atlanta at 5.3. There's a few teams that are just kind of in the middle there, but there's going to be some good pitching performances today. I think our job now is just to weed out the spots that don't make much sense, because look at all of, okay, so how many bad offenses are in baseball? Like, what would we say, 6 or 7 that are just outright terrible?
Yeah, something like that. Or there's also teams that have like 3 good hitters and then 6 terrible hitters.
Sure, so
like
or a lot of strikeouts.
Louis Cardinals, for instance. Cardinals have like a couple good hitters at the top of the order, and then it's like free outs, lineup spots like 5 through 9.
It's like outside of the Rockies not being on this slate, mostly all of the bad offenses are, and a lot of good pitcher parts. If I'm looking at it from the top, I'm going Glasnow, because we still don't know what Gray's pitch count looks like. That's really important. Kirby, I know you feel different there. And then I think I'm probably throwing Montas in as my guy that's getting, you know, minimal ownership in a good spot, good park, facing a team with a sub 4 run total and strikes out at a league high clip against right-handed pitching.
Yeah, that's if I'm paying up for a pitcher all the way at the top, more often than not, it's going to be Tyler Glasnow today. If I want to be contrarian, it's going to be Frankie Montas on the high end. And then if I am looking at my favorite cheap pitcher to get to, and it's not even because I think he's particularly good, but Ross Stripling is 6,000 pitching at home against the St. Louis Cardinals, who kind of what I was alluding to before. They've got Nolan Arenado. They've got Paul Goldschmidt. They've got some individual hitters like Nolan Gorman, who are going to give pitchers some troubles at times, but really the back end of the order is terrible. And since it is a pitcher-friendly ballpark, he's only 6K. He's cheap enough to where you could see a scenario. It's like, all right, Ross Stripling could put up 13, 14 fantasy points. If expensive hitters go off, then he could end up in an optimal lineup. I don't think we're going to have to go cheap all that frequently for this slate, but if I had to pick one guy, Stripling would be the one.
What do you make of Chris Bassitt today? There are strikeouts. The Yankees haven't been striking out at a high clip. Obviously, they're playing great baseball right now. He's 8%. I wouldn't be surprised if he's just very low-owned, given how many alternate options are in this same price range.
I've never been all that high on Chris Bassitt as a pitcher relative to what the market's been, and now he's got a matchup against the New York Yankees as well, and maybe if he's like 1% or 2% owned, he'd be somebody I want to take shots on, but he shows up in a couple of my lineups to the Sims right now, but it's hard to like the matchup against the Yankees. So that's going to be a spot that I'm likely staying away from.
Is Stripling your only, you know, mid-range to cheap guy that you're looking at?
He's my favorite. Adrian Hauser also makes some semblance of sense just because of what his price point is, pitching in a pitcher-friendly ballpark. Well, the Pirates offense has been much better than expected to start the season. It's like going to drop off at some point. It feels like this is the fifth year in a row the Pirates just gotten off to a torrid start. Everybody buys into the Pirates, then they fall off by the midway point of the season. They end up being somewhere around 500. So there's going to be regression coming for the Pirates. Hauser, just because his price point, like I said, in play, but I do prefer getting to Stripling for cheap.
All right, one more here. What about Luis Gil? Tough matchup against Toronto, in Toronto. 7,400, clear strikeout upside, struck out 37% of the batters that he's faced thus far, very early in the season, don't get me wrong. But I'm kind of not enamored with this spot. He's only getting 10% swinging strikes, too. It's a tough matchup. I don't love the park. He's clearly struggled with walks, 18% walks. I don't know. I see a few red flags here that concern me a little bit, even though he's been good. XERA 199, 281 FIP. Like, I'm not turning my nose at this guy and saying he hasn't been good. He has. But I don't know if this is the day.
No, it's a tough matchup. The Yankees typically don't let him work super deep into games. He brings a lot of it on himself by walking everybody, like you had mentioned. And this is not an issue exclusive to a small sample size this year. If you look at previous years, even in the minor leagues, he's always struggled with walks. His brief stint at the major league level last year, he had a 10.5% walk rate. It's 18.4% so far this year. So he's got a pitcher who's got really good stuff in Luis Gil. He's capable of generating swing and misses and strikeouts, but it's like, what's the realistic upside for a pitcher who isn't a very difficult matchup and is probably throwing something like four innings?
I don't think it's that significant at all. I don't want to get to Joe Ross, Arrighetti, Vines, Parker. Just making sure we leave no stone unturned here. With this new format, Greg, I want to make sure we're not skipping over anything. I don't think we are. The only other guy getting 1% that has very more positive leverage than anybody else in our tool, granted, that's going to happen when you're 1% owned, just the way it is, 8% top two pitcher today, is Martin Perez. I would assume eventually the other shoe is going to drop. He's been very good to start the season, though, and it's been a little bit surprising. Now, to be fair, he's still getting sub 20% strikeouts, but I don't know. He's always just kind of been a pitcher that can hold his own. He's not good. He's not bad at all. I don't know. I guess 1% is the only reason I'm bringing him up, but 7,600 isn't cheap. You're right. You're probably just going to a Stripling against St. Louis, even an Adrian Hauser in a favorable park against Pittsburgh. Not sure why we'd pay the additional 1,600 or 1,100 to get to Perez.
He's got a 16.1% career strikeout rate. So his strikeouts, which are low this year, are way like actually nearly the best mark of his career at 19.2%. He had a 15.3% strikeout rate for the entirety of last year. outside of one of these starts where like a Ronel Blanco type performance where it's like, hey, the ball just keeps getting put in play and gets hit two fielders, there's just not all that likelihood of a chance that Martin Perez is ever going to have all that big of fantasy games. His velocity is also way down this year, which is a little bit of a concern. Still, small sample size. He's made three starts, thrown 19 innings. But it's just never all that great of a situation to roster some of these pitchers with no strikeout upside that are very reliant on balls being hit to fielders. Because what's most likely to happen is a lot of those are going to turn into singles, and then ultimately some of those runs end up coming to score. Like the most frequent start you get out of Martin Perez is like six innings, gives up a handful of hits, gives up three runs, strikes out two or three guys, ends himself up with like 10 fantasy points. Just not enough upside for me to get there.
Agreed. I mean, look, he is giving up a lot of hard contact and he gets a lot. He's getting a lot of ground balls, which is going to benefit him, but it doesn't really benefit us much from a DFS perspective. And if you're not getting consistent swings and misses, 8% swinging strike rate, and like you said, all those balls getting put in play eventually comes back to bite you, that seems like just too high of a price point for me. 88% strand rate so far this year. That's not going to last at all. 298 BABIP, just not happening. I mean, 298 BABIP is fine, but the left on base percentage, 88%, is insanely high. Won't last. Anyway, let's talk about stacks. Looking in the Sims right now, stack exposure, Greg. I'm sorting by five-man stacks, and Jordan can pull it up on the screen. We're going to have different results, of course, but they'll be relatively similar. St. Louis, Kansas City, and San Diego are my three highest exposed five-man stacks right now.
Yeah, so just because I was also just running everything with the stochastic data, like you said, we're going to have a very similar sort of looking results. And then also as far as ownership goes, these are not the most popular offenses on this level. KC's one of them. But the chalkiest offense is the Los Angeles Dodgers, who are not listed amongst those names. But San Diego, St. Louis, they are. And before we're talking about liking Ross Stripling as a pitcher to potentially get to, it doesn't mean I don't like the offense against him, though. Because one thing that makes Stripling look at least playable from a DFS standpoint is how cheap he is, and also that he benefits from getting to face the end of the Cardinals lineup. The good thing about us building DFS lineups, we don't have to roster any of the guys at the end of the Cardinals lineup, and they still do have decent hitters at the top of the order. So you do have a Cardinal stack that's cheap, and you also have a Ross Stripling that's very cheap as a pitcher. And relative to their salaries, I think each of them has upside. So I understand why I'm getting to both ends of it in the Sims.
Yeah, me too. But with Kansas City, it makes a lot of sense, right? Third highest top stack probability in our top stack tool, fifth highest top value, highest stack score of any team. They are getting ownership, but I think a lot of that just comes down to the fact that, Greg, you look at this team and you go, all right, well, they're not nearly as expensive. Outside of Bobby Witt, they're not nearly as expensive as the Dodgers or Atlanta or any of those teams. They have a 5-run total in Chicago against a guy that's not even in the player pool. It does make a lot of sense. So I'm on board with it. It's just one of those things where, are you okay with Kansas City being a relatively popular team?
Yeah, it's going to be a team. I assume later on in the day when I'm digging through it more, I'm probably going to have less ownership to KC than I have now. Definitely not a team I'd be playing in single entry at their ownership. I wouldn't play them or the Dodgers. The Dodgers, they're just so expensive. It's hard to make five-man stacks. And we've already talked about some payoff options we like at pitcher. So I'll have a lot of three-man stacks of the Dodgers, not primary five-man stacks. And yeah, KC, my ownership on them is going to come down later in the day.
Yeah. Look, there's a few teams that I'm just not interested in getting to. Oakland, Washington. This is one of the reasons we're trying out a new format, because you look, White Sox, Cincinnati, you may have some reservations. I know Sean V certainly did reservations about Kirby, but it's just not like, what are you, and I know Cincinnati's been putting up runs. But are you really, like, are you stacking Cincinnati for them to get power happy with homers at T-Mobile Park? Right? Like, maybe you are. To me, it seems like not the best idea. Seattle against Montas doesn't look like a great spot. I don't know. There's probably like six or seven teams that I'm just not particularly interested in today.
Yeah, but there is one team I like a whole bunch. A whole bunch. And that
Let me
is...
take a guess.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, well, hold on. Are they one of the chalky ones or are they not chalky?
Not chalky.
No? Okay. Hold on. Arizona?
Nah, Atlanta. So Atlanta is the most positive leverage team that we have in the top stacks. So I also come in overweight to them as far as five-man stacks go. If I'm going to pay up for an offense today, I would prefer to go the Atlanta way as opposed to the Dodgers side, just because you're going to be getting the Braves at half the ownership of what the Dodgers are. And there's a pitcher who's going out there for Houston today in Spencer Arrighetti, who just looked terrible in his first major league start. And then you look at his minor league numbers, and I'm really skeptical that he's ready to pitch at the big league level. We talked about the walk rate of Luis Gil, and Arrighetti this year in AAA, 18.9% walk rate. Last year in AAA, 13.4% walk rate. He does appear to have pretty good stuff. He is not one of the top-ranked prospects in the Houston organization or anything like that. The one positive thing you could say is he had a 95% average fastball velocity in his first start. But then also, you look at some of his ground ball numbers, 23% in his first start. And then you look at his minor league numbers last year, 32.9% ground ball rate. So you got this pitcher who's giving up a bunch of fly balls, can't throw strikes. So he's going to be giving up fly balls to this Atlanta team with players on base. That's a recipe for disaster. And with the field not really getting there, give me the Braves against an unknown pitcher who's also like not particularly highly ranked as a prospect.
All right. So Jordan, do me a favor. Go to lineups in the Sims. Now go to where you see stack type. Okay. Yeah. Click that. And we're going to filter by ATL. Cause Gray, I want to see what these Atlanta stacks look like. Right. Cause you look at top value. Only the Reds have a lower value score than Atlanta today. I don't think it means we can't get there, though. Between 3-4 and 5-man stacks, I'm getting about 10% Atlanta. And some of these, all right, like a 4-4 for me was my first one that popped up with Glasnow and Gray. So how much of the bottom half of this order are we going to be getting? Wait, are you telling me that can't be right, Jordan? How are we getting zero? Go. Get rid of it for a second. Go to exposure.
Jordan, go to the player exposure.
Oh, stack. I'm sorry. Yeah, I said stack. All right. Yep. That's right. There you go. Thank you. All right. So, like, there's your first five-man, third down, five-man Atlanta stack. What does the pitching look like with it? Kirby and Heel. I see Heel and Kirby again. That's interesting. Like St. Louis 5-3 with Glasnow and Hauser. So it is doable. But I think, Greg, if you're stacking Atlanta, you're going to have to be, and I have no problems with this, you're going to have to be open to, you know, middle, bottom of the order guys as well.
Yeah, and I mean, the order is, there are hitters with power top to bottom. Like Jared Kelenic is formerly one of the top hitting prospects in baseball. And has he panned out relative to his prospect acumen? No, not really, but he's still a guy who had a solid season last year. Off the top of my head, he had like a 108 WRC plus. He projects to be an over 100 WRC plus this year as well. So I still think that they do have hitters that are quality at the bottom of the order. And the biggest thing to me as well is, yeah, like you're not going to be playing the pitchers you're most comfortable with in all of those Braves lineups, but the field is already doing it with the Dodgers. I just like doing it with a different team.
I totally get it. Yeah. I don't even think the pitching looks all that bad for these stacks. You know, at least somebody like Hauser, while he's never going to excite you, it's not like he has a bad matchup. You know, Pittsburgh is still an underwhelming offense. It's not a bad park. I think a few of these make sense. Kirby sub 9K against the Reds team with a 3.3 run implied total. I get it. Jordan, do me a favor. Go to stacks and go to KC. Same filter you did the first. Same filter you did the first time.
By the way, while he's doing that, kind of out of curiosity, I just filtered by my top Brave stacks and then selected the top 50 of them. Glasnow still shows up in 30% of those lineups. What ends up happening, though, is you get to also like Hauser, Stripling. They each showed up in 30% of lineups as well. So you're going to have to roster one cheap pitcher. But still, if it's like Glasnow, one cheap pitcher, and if you were making like four different Brave stacks, for instance, you just went Glasnow with like one different cheap pitcher, I think that you'd be setting yourself up in a pretty good spot for a couple of those cheap pitchers to be serviceable at least.
What are your pitcher exposures? Like your top five pitcher exposures in those Brave stacks?
Glasnow, Hauser, Stripling, Heel, and Sonny Gray.
Okay. And you guys, of course, you ever want to check out the Sims tool, all of our tools, links in the description and chat, whether it's a week or a month, no better way to play DFS. Even if it's the lineup generator as well, which is getting you in at a excellent price. Start there, work your way up. Had excellent results with the MLB lineup generator, but whatever it is, you want to get all the data, all of the tools, top pitcher, top stacks tool, ownership, top hitters tool with the Sims, the contest generator, premium Discord. I don't know what I'm forgetting, Greg, but I mean, if you're playing DFS and you're even remotely serious about it, whether it's the lineup generator or the Sims, any package you can think of, or just all of the data and tools, we've got you covered on a week or monthly basis.
Yeah. I think you hit everything. Yes. What did you miss? And I'm just kind of listening. Like, nah, pretty much hit on everything.
Projections, but like obviously.
Yeah.
But
yeah, you get Discord access. So especially if you guys are ever watching live before lock or even post lock, or maybe we're not on the air, you have a question, ask us. You could always hit us up in Discord when you're on any of the stochastic packages.
Yeah. Yeah. And Greg and my DMs are open on Twitter as well. And you have all the tutorials out there that go a super long way in helping people understand how to use these tools. But they're intuitive. They're easy to use. They're really easy to use. And the lineup generator, you're just picking your stack type and selecting the lineups you want based on the optimal projection, based on how high owned they are, how chalky or contrarian. You can choose whether you want like cash games, tournaments, four-man stacks, five-man stacks. You can mix them together. And then once you save them or discard the ones you don't like, swap players that you don't want, lock players that you want, you can upload it straight to CSV. So lineup generator, a ton of utility for MLB. And I think you guys will love it. All right. So if we're trying to find one or two before we get out of here, one or two, say, contrarian-ish type stacks, because there's always something out there. And the Sims are always going to give us something. I won't say always, but generally speaking, give us something where you probably wouldn't have gotten to that if you were hand building. Like for me, I think probably the biggest one is that St. Louis team. I don't think St. Louis is going to be popular at all today. We've got that stack at 4% ownership. I'm getting a good amount of St. Louis today, just being that they're highly leveraged and, you know, a positively simmed stack in our tools. Is there any other teams that aren't getting ownership but profile nicely and are popping up in the Sims or the lineup generator?
Yeah, so the Atlanta Braves would be one of them. Just talked on them, though. But in the interest of finding, like, two different contrarian stacks I like, the Braves, if I'm going to be an expensive contrarian stack, if I'm going to be going cheaper, All right, so if I'm going to be going cheap, it's going to be the White Sox, but mostly as a secondary stack because of how ridiculously cheap the pricing is on this team. If you go through the White Sox just top to bottom, we have them with a 20.5% chance to be the top value stack on the slate. It's like 3x any other team's mark on the slate. So even though we have them with some of the lowest odds to be the top scoring team, it's such a cheap offense. And it's not like it's a brutally difficult matchup against Seth Lugo that I do think there are one-offs that really makes sense from the Chicago White Sox. So I'll filter by my individual White Sox players to see which ones I'm getting to the most here. But just because this team is so cheap and nobody's getting there, I think it warrants some consideration. Yeah, so Leonin Sosa, Dominic Fletcher, Braden Shumake, these hitters are all terrible. But when you get guys who are barely above min price, that's a lot of utility to spend up for some of the better pitchers on the slate and get yourself two more of like Glasnow, or potentially get some more of Frankie Montas as a pay-up option that is a little bit more contrarian. So that's where I think there's utility in the White Sox bats.
All right, so how about this? Favorite high-end pitcher, favorite, well, I know I was going to say contrarian, but I know you're going Glasnow, favorite high-end, and then contrarian is going to be Montas, right?
Yep.
Favorite cheap pitcher?
Stripling.
Okay. I think I'd go through all three with you on that. I do like Kirby more than you do today, though, but I totally get the appeal of Montas getting less ownership than Kirby, less ownership than Merrill Kelly, all of those guys. Looks good. Favorite stacks? I definitely like a couple of them out there that are going to pop. Like Atlanta, you're right. Atlanta, we saw it's not that difficult to get to the Atlanta Braves today. And while the ownership is high, I totally get why Kansas City is popping up big for me right now, because they are priced at a point against Nastrini, who, again, not even in the player pool, with a 5-run total in a fine park, why they would be popular and why I'd be getting a lot. Now, the thing is, right now, I'm still getting twice the field. I'm getting two times the field on Kansas City. So I'm okay with it.
For me, I'm going to go with the Atlanta Braves and the San Diego Padres, mostly just because Joe Ross is terrible. He was somebody who, for the longest time, was a top pitching prospect, but numerous injuries set him back. So that's something where he doesn't have the same stuff as he had when he was a prospect. But then also on top of that, Joe Ross has just pretty consistently not been great at the big league level. He's got a tough matchup against the San Diego Padres, who really do have a great offense for stacking purposes at the top. It's such a loaded offense when you got Fernando Tatis, when you've got Manny Machado. So they don't have Juan Soto in the offense anymore, but still, it's a very potent offense when you look at the top half. And Ha-Sung Kim's a very underrated hitter as well. So those are the two offenses I think as of now, if the slate was starting, I'd likely be getting the most exposure to. Padres and Braves.
All right. Oh, and before we go, my favorite site, Underdog Fantasy. $100 first match deposit bonus. Ton of free squares all the time for new users. It was nice, you and me. I didn't even know you were in the best ball streets. You and I talked a lot of best ball last year. Cannot wait for that to return. Daily drafts, best ball for all sports over there. Daily MLB, daily NBA, daily NFL drafts. Pick them where you can 20X your entry. I do a video every day on the Odd Shopper channel. We've been crushing for NBA up until Friday. We were dominating for NBA on all of those underdog videos. Doing an underdog MLB video as well. Awesome site, $100 instant first match deposit bonus, meaning whatever you put in is instantly matched. I don't know. I mean, when you have like eight different formats as they do, Greg, it's hard not to be on a site like Underdog. So shout out to Underdog.
Yeah, I'm just checking to see if they have any free squares available for today, but nothing marked as of now. Maybe we'll get an announcement or something later, but they do a lot of free squares there as well.
They generally, yeah, if you're new. So yeah, get it instantly matched, $100. Play a daily drafts, best balls. Dude, wait till you see these prize pools. After this NFL draft, it's going to be insane. Best ball is going to be kicking up within a week from now. So you better be in on it because we're going to be talking about it. You don't want to feel left out. Link in the description and in chat as always. Appreciate you guys hanging out. Follow Greg, G. Ehrenberg, DFS, me at Lafayette underscore D. Live before lock tonight. Basketball's back tomorrow. We'll see you back here for the next one. 11 o'clock Eastern, Tuesday morning. Peace.